Handoff goes to Kamara, looking for space on the right side towards the goal line. Touchdown, Alvin Kamara! So Alvin Kamara, with his sixth rushing touchdown of the game, ties the most ever in an NFL football game.
Taking Alvin Kamara early in your fantasy football draft is pretty much a no-brainer. Anyone can do that. But like in real life, building a fantasy championship roster requires discipline. It requires principles. So today, with fantasy draft season now upon us, we bring you news you can use. As the king of the keeper league, the pharaoh of the flex position, the sultan of the survivor pool, the helper of Hove himself, Matthew Berry shares his draft manifesto and the habits that enabled him to build a truly ridiculous life. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, August 13th. This is ESPN Daily. Matthew Berry, you are a personal fantasy football consigliere to, like, legitimate A-list celebrities, rappers, actors, athletes, and I've summoned you here because I want to give our listeners the same VIP treatment, because I want to be honest here, Matthew. America is addicted to football, both real and imagined, and you've manufactured this entire incredibly strange career that's premised on the latter.
I've been very blessed, and thanks to the popularity of fantasy football and ESPN, I've gotten to experience and meet a bunch of amazing people that I never would have otherwise.
Matthew Berry is ESPN's fantasy football expert and the co-host of the Fantasy Focus podcast.
So I'm incredibly grateful, and it's been a good ride. It's definitely been a good ride, no question.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're in a fantasy league with Jay-Z, you're in a fantasy league with all of the Avengers. That is not even a joke, that's a thing.
Yes.
That you do.
I'm actually in the Avengers movie. That's the crazy, to me, me being in a fantasy league isn't that crazy. Me being in the highest grossing movie of all time worldwide is a crazy thing to me.
Matthew Berry, for the record, yes, on IMDb, an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Avengers Endgame. Congratulations on name-dropping yourself. That is an incredible accomplishment this early in a podcast.
I appreciate that. Are we done? Is that good? Have we done the interview?
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
All right,
we're good.
No.
Well, hold on.
Yeah.
So what I want from you now is numbers instead of names. How many fantasy drafts have you participated in your lifetime in general, like ballpark, do you think, at this point?
Oh, how many lifetime? I mean, hundreds of thousands, I would think.
It's so many.
If you include mock drafts, if you include,
yes,
like when I'm doing DFS, if I do like a DraftKings or a FanDuel, or, you know, where, you know, setting a lineup, like the process of selecting players, I mean, hundreds of thousands of times.
Hundreds of thousands of drafts. And so I'm just trying to, like, That is a staggering thing to try and imagine as a matter of just like calendar timeshare. But speaking of which, where are we at this point in your calendar year, Matthew, the way you live your life? How busy are you right now? How do you describe, for those uninitiated into your inner circle, what it's like to be you right now?
Listen, I'm an accountant and it's tax season. It's crazy busy, to be honest with you, Pablo. I'll give you an example. So today, I'm supposed to be writing my big preseason love-hate column, which is my biggest column of the season. But I won't start my writing process until probably about 7 o'clock tonight, because I'm doing this podcast. We're doing a sports-centered featured piece for the marathon. I have a meeting about the Fantasy Football Marathon, which starts next Tuesday at 7 p.m. We're doing a new episode of The Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus tomorrow. So I have a meeting with producers about that. So all that stuff is going to lead up until 7 o'clock when I actually can turn off the phones and do my job, if that makes any sense. Like, it's...
I'm hearing what feel like meeting or email alerts in the background, which just adds to this notion that, okay.
I don't know how to turn those off.
This is the documentary that I want to make with you, Matthew. This is the peak, which is sort of like fitting, right? Like, the fantasy football league experience, if we're being honest with ourselves, is really about the draft.
Yeah, totally. These are the two busiest weeks of my generally every year. And then, you know, you're getting texts from from friends and people that you know that
Avengers,
asking for
yeah, rappers,
right.
yeah,
rappers, movie stars, CEOs, the whole bit, and asking for you know, asking for fantasy advice, asking who you like. But listen, that's the gig, Pablo. That's the gig.
Yes, and, you know, this is the life you've chosen.
Right?
Yes,
it's flattering when people are like, I mean, people are like, hey, I trust your opinion. Because, you know, fantasy football, it's serious business, man. You don't want to screw up your draft. And so I'm always flattered when people reach out and want my help and guidance.
So I am here to ask for your help and guidance, to really just open my third eye of fantasy football. Because, listen, you have this manifesto that you've written, that you write, after now 40 years or so of experience. It's on ESPN.com. It is called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Drafters. So let's get to habit one. Because it turns out, Matthew, that there is stuff that I need to do before I even enter the physical or increasingly now virtual draft war room. So before I even see the spread, the dips, the various vices I indulge in on fantasy draft day, what do I need to do? What's the first habit?
Well, you have to understand what you're preparing for, right? You're going to need to prep, but like, it's not just enough to know about your players. Like, somebody's like, hey, I'm in a tight end premium scoring league with pick 3. Is that too early for Kelsey? What that means is that tight ends get more points for their receptions than other players. So you might get a half point per reception, but if you have a tight end, you get a full point per reception. And in a scoring system like that, yes, Travis Kelsey is absolutely worth a top 3 pick. I guess, put it another way, like, okay, hey, Pablo, I want you to go take a driving test. And you'd be like, okay, great, but shouldn't you be like, well, is it a stick shift or is it, you know, is it automatic?
What a nightmare. My God, what a nightmare a stick shift driving test would be for me.
Right, or just anyone. Like, I when I was a kid, no way was I doing that. I can't even drive a stick shift now. The idea there is that, like, well, you see, you need to know, like, well, you're going to have to parallel park. Is it going to be a written test or is it going to be a driving test? Like, are you going to be on back roads or are you going to be on the freeway? Like, you got to know what you're preparing for. So understand what your scoring system is. Understand how many people are in your league. Understand, you know, things like how big is the roster size, right? We're going into a season where COVID is likely to impact the game again. Are you going to have IR spots? Are you going to have IR spots that allow you to put players that have been placed on the COVID-19 list into that IR spot? If you have more IR spots, you can take more chances on injured players. But if you have a limited bench, if you only have like 4 or 5 bench spots and no IR, then you're like, you know what? Pretty much everyone on my bench is going to need to contribute at some point. I can take less flyers.
Okay, so I understand why knowing the law of the land is vitally important. I'm getting all my accounting in order now. So I want to move on to habit number 2. Identify relative depth at every position. What does that mean, Matthew?
Not every position is equal to the other, right? Because fantasy football isn't just about knowing, hey, this player is good, this player is bad. But it's also about roster construction, right? We don't have access to every player. We have a finite amount of players on our team. And so it's putting all those pieces together and understanding how it relates to your specific league. Like, for example, in general, the quarterback position is rarely very deep. But if you play in a 14-team super flex league, which allows you to start 2 quarterbacks every week, in essence, every week, 28 quarterbacks being starting.
That's madness.
Then it is not a deep position at all, and many quarterbacks will be first-round picks. Whereas if you're in an ESPN standard league, which is 10 teams, you only start 1 quarterback, Patrick Mahomes probably isn't going, you know, in the first couple of rounds. Here's what I will tell you. In terms of quarterback is very, very deep. But ultimately, in an ideal world, you want to get a quarterback that uses his legs. 8 of the top 10 quarterbacks last year had at least 200 yards rushing. 7 of them had at least 15 of their fantasy points come from rushing. It's just the way the NFL has changed. There's not nearly enough fantasy upside for the Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisbergers of the world, the guys that can just drop back and throw it and may have 4,500 passing yards. But a player that has maybe less passing yards but runs will be much more valuable. I mean, even Patrick Mahomes, the number one quarterback in fantasy, had over 200 rushing yards last year with his legs. Like, he runs more than people think. But then you also think about the other guys that are at the top at the position, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. You know, all these guys are, you know, very mobile. Jalen Hurts. Everyone's sitting here going, ah, Jalen Hurts, he's super inaccurate. Jalen Hurts last year comes in. His accuracy was like around 56%. At times he looked lost, but he was running. Jalen Hurts, over the final four games of the season last year, the only four games he started, was the ninth best quarterback in fantasy on a points per game basis. Like, that's how much rushing matters. I, by the way, and I'm high on Jalen Hurts this year as a sleeper. I also think, like, Trey Lance or Justin Fields, we don't know if they're going to start game one for their respective NFL teams, but the minute those guys start, they're going to be really good in fantasy. You get into running back and wide receiver, and I think in general, wide receiver is much deeper than running back. The amount of, you know, kind of bell cow running backs there are is few and far between this year. There's a lot of charts in the Draft Day Manifesto, which I suggest you go and look at. But in essence, what I would tell you is that the dip from running back 5 to running back 10 compared to the dip from running wide receiver 5 to wide receiver 10 is significant. Put it another way. After the elite running backs, there's a much steeper drop-off in production than there is at wide receiver. Wide receiver, there's much more depth at the position. There's much more likely chance you can get a productive top 20 wide receiver, you know, in the 30s this year. But the James Robinsons of the world, you know, who was an undrafted fantasy player last year and ended up being a top five fantasy running back, those are few and far between. So in essence, running back early, then wide receiver.
Great. Okay, noted. So Matthew, I'm looking at habit 3. And this one seems almost philosophical, which I do appreciate. So what is the deal here, as you see it, with risk minimization that the rest of us so often miss?
Yeah, I think a lot of times what happens with fantasy football, probably with everything in life, but specifically about fantasy football, is that people overthink it. I say this every year. At a fundamental level, fantasy football is entirely about minimizing risk and giving yourself the best odds to win on a weekly basis. That's it. It's that simple, right? The truth is that none of us can predict the future. Like, it's a game played with a leather oblong-shaped ball. Weird stuff happens.
Randomness is built into the design of the sport, yes.
Correct. And so you can't predict the future, Pablo. I can't predict the future. No one can predict the future. No one can. So all we can do is just basically minimize risk and try to give ourselves the best odds at winning. You always want to look at every decision when it comes to who to draft, who to drop, who to waive, whether or not to make this trade. It all comes down to, you should literally just ask yourself this simple question: what's most likely to happen? And just do that. Doesn't mean it will happen, but what's most likely to happen? For example, there's only one quarterback in the NFL who's thrown for 30 touchdowns each of the past 2 years. It's Russell Wilson, and he's actually done it for 4 straight. So what's most likely to happen this year? It's not a guarantee Russell Wilson throws 30 touchdowns this year, but it's more likely than not that he does.
All right, Matthew, after the break, I want to get to your other 4 habits of highly effective fantasy drafters and why fantasy football is actually America's great equalizer.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So Matthew, I'm writing down all the names you're giving me. I'm consulting your rankings. And all of this obsession about making my perfect master cheat sheet, which is what I do neurotically every year, it brings us to your 4th habit for highly effective drafters. which is how much should we treat all of these rankings as religion?
As a loose guideline. And this is, looking, and I'm telling you this, Pablo, as somebody that came, that spends an inordinate amount of time doing my rankings, looking at projections, crunching numbers, thinking about every possible scenario, playing out, you know, the seasons and then during the week, the games in my mind, what's most likely to happen in every scenario. You have to use it as a loose guideline. First off, like a lot of times the difference between one player and another player is one guy steps out of bounds at the ones, one guy falls into the end zone, you know, and they get that extra touchdown and suddenly they're 10 spots higher. And it's also about roster construction in terms of where you are in the draft. Like once you get past your first five picks or so, it really becomes about roster construction in the draft and how's it going. And like, oh, there's been a big wide receiver run. I need to grab somebody. Or there's, you know, everyone's waiting on quarterback. I can continue to wait on quarterback. So it's really sort of what's going on in your draft. The example I give here in terms of rankings, just specifically, is the two wide receivers from Seattle last year, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. So if you look at the end of the season rankings, Metcalf finished as wide receiver 7. Tyler Lockett finished as wide receiver 8. They were separated by just 5.9 fantasy points. So really close. So in theory, you were like, okay, both these guys were top 8 guys. They were separated by less than 6 points. Doesn't matter which one you got, right? 7 or 8. But the truth is, if you look a little bit closer, Tyler Lockett had 46% of his total fantasy points in just 3 games. He had like 3 massive games, which resulted in about half of his fantasy point total for last year. He had 7 different games last year. This is Tyler Lockett with below 9 fantasy points. Meanwhile, DK Metcalf had 11 different games with 12 or more fantasy points. He was very, very consistent, much more consistent. Lockett was much more of a boom or bust player. You would much rather have had DK Metcalf last year over the course of a season than Tyler Lockett. Because again, Metcalf gave you production every single week. Lockett gave you these huge boom weeks, but also a lot of bust weeks. And it was hard to know when those weeks were coming because there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason as to when that happened. So my point is that even though the rankings, quote, would have told you they're very similar players, one was 7, one was 8, they're separated by less than 6 points, the truth is there was a massive difference between Metcalf and Lockett in terms of how they helped your fantasy team last year. Because fantasy football is not a season-long game. Fantasy football is a weekly game that's played over the course of a season, and that's an important distinction.
And the Lockett-Metcalf example, Matthew, brings us to habit 5 now. Because you have a very strong view on the idea of doubling up on drafting players on the same team, quite often, of course, wide receivers in particular. So what counsel do you have for me on that?
So, I mean, I think one of the habits of highly effective drafters is that they focus on winning weeks. They understand that it's not about you. Like, again, we just talked about Metcalf and Lockett, and you're like, oh, both those guys had huge years last year, and they were actually very different fantasy players last year, right? So in essence, when I draft a player, Pablo, I want him to be one of two kinds of players. And I always think about sort of range of outcomes. But I want them to either be a high floor guy, meaning that they are somebody that you sort of just start no matter what, every week unless they're injured or it's a bye week. You know, your Nick Chubbs of the world, guys that you're going to draft in the first couple of rounds. Your first 5 picks should be those kind of guys, guys that it doesn't matter who they're playing, what the matchup is, if they're healthy and active, you're starting them, okay? But then the other guys that I want to draft after those kind of that core 5 are players that have the ability to be elite at their position, even if it's only for a short period of time. The example I use here is I call it the never James White rule. Okay? James White, the running back for the Patriots.
Yeah. You have a whole rule named after, for most NFL fans, like a pretty minor character, but someone obviously who's very important to you.
The problem with James White and why I say never James White is that James White is never, or almost never, going to win you a week by himself. Over the past 2 years, White has won. Count him one game with at least 16.5 fantasy points. Meanwhile, over that same stretch, there are 65 different running backs that have multiple games with at least 16.5 fantasy points, including guys like Giovanni Bernard, Boston Scott, Tony Pollard, Latavius Murray, Jamal Williams. Pablo, it's not, this is an important point for your listeners. It's not just about having a player that scores points. It's knowing when to start that player, which is an underrated aspect of fantasy football. I know that seems dumb, but people forget that.
It seems very obvious, but you're right, because I have been the guy with the dude who had a 35-point fantasy Sunday on my bench.
And if you ever need, quote, James White production, you can find someone like him, that similar level production, on your waiver wire. Meanwhile, drafting somebody like Tony Pollard, who's the backup to Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas, like, Tony Pollard is one Ezekiel Elliott hamstring away from being a top five fantasy running back. Again, we never root for injuries, but the truth is that it's a violent game and players get injured. And so I would much rather have Tony Pollard, because if Tony Pollard has value this year, I'm going to know when those games are. Mm. I'm not going to know the games that James White winds up falling into the end zone, because that's just random.
So this does all speak to psychology, Matthew, and that gets us to habit number six. Because this one feels like you're putting me on a therapy couch and trying to give me some personal advice about how to be a better person. But in the fantasy context, what does that actually entail?
The habit six of highly effective drafters is that they are adaptable and trust themselves above all others. The fact is that you don't need to, you know, study, analyze, crunch all the numbers, and truly nerd out. That's my job. My job is to do that so you can have a life. But what you should do is have a general sense of every player. You like this player, you don't like that player. You know, just kind of a thumbs up or thumbs down on players. And one way that you can do this is by mock drafting. The more you mock draft, the more you have an opinion on every player, the more prepared you'll be, so that when you get into a draft in a situation that you hadn't expected, it'll be easier for you to adapt and come up with a team that you like, because no two drafts are the same.
I mean, you're the guy who's done hundreds of thousands of them, so I do feel like on this particular matter, you do have authority. Yes.
Thank you. You know, in the article, I use the Mike Tyson quote, right? You know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Like, you can sit here and say, like, I'm going running back, but you find yourself, you know, with pick 12 and 11 running backs go before you, and Travis Kelce is sitting there at 12, and you're like, well, I'm taking Travis Kelce. He shouldn't be going this late. So, you know, so great. Now you've got Kelce. You'd planned on waiting on tight end, but Kelce fell in your lap. So now what are you doing? You know, and mock drafting a bunch of different times from your spot, trying a bunch of different scenarios, will help you see what kind of team you like and what you want to avoid when you get into the draft room.
So, okay, Matthew, we're through the draft. The thing is over. I feel like I have a pretty solid hypothetical team at this point. I didn't get everybody that I wanted to, the odds are, but I did adapt in ways that you encouraged me to. So what is left for me to do here with all of that in the rearview mirror with habit number seven?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that while draft day is the most important day, it's not the only day. Truth is if you look back to last year, and this is something that we do every single year and it's always the case, six of the 12 players that were rostered on the most ESPN playoff teams, like we looked at every team of the, you know, or the millions of teams that play with us, we looked at every team that made the playoffs. And of the 12 players that were rostered the most on all of those playoff teams, six of them, Pablo, were waiver wire pickups during the season. James Robinson, Justin Herbert, there was some Miles Gaskin, the Dolphins running back, Chase Claypool, of course, from Pittsburgh, and Mike Davis, who was the backup running back that filled in for Christian McCaffrey much of last year.
Wait, Matthew, you're saying out of all the millions, six guys kept on recurring on the ones that made the playoffs. That's pretty telling.
Correct. And they were all, again, they weren't guys that were drafted. So my point is that no matter how much planning we all do, like, it's going to be weird stuff. People we don't expect to get injured. There's going to be players that emerge this year that we're not counting on. And the point is that, you know, if we're building a house here, the draft is really just a foundation. It's not your windows. It's not your shiplack. You know, it's not all the stuff you put into a house. It's just your foundation, and you're going to build on it over the course of the season. And so how that manifests itself during draft day are two things. Number one is that at the end of the draft, if you hate your team, don't worry about it. You still got a lot of work to do. Don't worry about it, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities to improve that team over the course of the year. But more importantly is that I don't want to see anyone that's drafting chase a player because they feel like, I don't know, if there's a bunch of tight ends, you're just like, oh, let me just grab a tight end to have one. Like, if there's a run happening, don't force a player. Don't draft a player a couple rounds too early just because you feel like you need somebody at that position. Draft another running back. Draft another high-end wide receiver. Like, you can always trade, right? So it's about just understanding that, like, all you're doing during the draft is creating building blocks in the foundation of your team. Your team is not a finished product after the draft. And so give yourself something to work with instead of panicking.
So what you're telling me, Matthew, is that even Jay-Z, when he calls you up for advice or texts you or whatever, you're telling him that he's still going to have to search through the waiver wire every week like a normal schlub.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the brilliance of fantasy football. The brilliance of fantasy football is that it is the great equalizer. That, you know what I mean? That, like, you could be, like, you know, you could be the CEO or a kid in the mailroom, right? You could be a grandmother, or you could be Jay-Z, right? It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how much you're worth, how famous you are. We're all still sweating our flex position. We're all still scouring the waiver wire for a usable running back the week That's two right. of our guys go down. Like, it's the great equalizer.
Matthew Berry, my favorite member of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, thank you for sharing your wisdoms and your habits with us.
Thanks, Pablo. Always fun.
All right. MLB took to the Field of Dreams last night, but after the break, one ESPN Daily producer tells how that same baseball diamond became a field of nightmares.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. Major League Baseball held its by now infamous, whimsical, heavily sponsored Field of Dreams game in Iowa last night, where the Yankees and the White Sox played in Dyersville in a baseball stadium the league built just a quarter mile away from the actual field used for the 1989 Kevin Costner movie. Now, no one from this podcast was at that game, but long before they ever built it, one of our own came. And it did not go as planned. So, Ryan Nantel, ESPN Daily producer, thank you for sharing a crucial part of your family history.
Hello, Pablo, and great to be here.
So, I'm looking at this article. It's dated August 12th, 1991. That's exactly 30 years ago as it happens. And the headline says, "No dream, colon, boy broke wrist playing catch on Field of Dreams." The boy at the center of the story is who?
That would be me, Pablo.
Yeah, look, you sent us a photo of a frame cut out of the story from back when, like, people read actual papers. So what happened here?
Back in the summer of 1991, I'm 10 years old, our family decided we wanted to drive from Wisconsin and visit the actual Field of Dreams. Southeastern Wisconsin, where I'm from, which is about a three-hour drive to Dyersville, Iowa.
Wait, so this is 1991. The film came out in 89. So I'm guessing you were a fan of this thing.
Yeah, I was a fan. I had probably watched it a couple times, you know, on-demand streaming movies were not as much of a thing, so you couldn't just watch it whenever you wanted to.
Yes.
So I'd watched it a couple times, and as a family, we all really liked it. We kind of bonded over it, and I think my parents kind of found out that the movie was filmed not that far away from us, so it kind of just landed on the list of things we were going to try to do over the summer. And then it didn't get off to a great start. It was going to be our first road trip in this Dodge Caravan my parents had recently bought.
of course it was a Dodge Caravan.
1990s when the minivans were really taking off. But then the day before, or maybe it was the morning before, I can't really remember, the van broke down. My dad has to haggle with the car dealership to upgrade the loaner sedan they were going to give us because my parents were really like, we really want to go in a minivan. We finally get the van. We make the drive. I don't have total recall of exactly what happened, but...
Yeah, you were 10 years old. That's understandable, I suppose. But what do you recollect?
So, you know, as we're approaching, it was just like cornfields as far as you could see anywhere.
Mm.
You look up the ridge, and it's right there. The white farmhouse with the wraparound porch, the big barn, the ball field in the foreground. It looks just like it does in the movie. And it's a bright, sunny day. Blue skies, beautifully manicured ball field, and all around more cornfields. It was really, really quaint and incredibly charming.
So you're there. It feels like you're in the movie. What do you do when you actually are, like, on the Field of Dreams?
It's funny because you could just basically walk right in and just show yourself around. There was, like, no admission or anything. My mom recalled that there were probably about 150 other people there that day.
I imagine all of them pulled up in Dodge Caravans.
Yes, most certainly. There was a critical mass of Dodge Caravans, certainly. We make our way to the outfield to have a catch with Dad.
You do have to fulfill, Ryan, of course, the have a catch with Dad scene that gets everybody crying, where Kevin Costner is tossing the ball with, you know, the ghost of his dad.
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
I'd like that.
Yes. But as a kid, I don't think I was really thinking that sentimentally. You know, the thing I remember is I didn't just want to play catch. I really wanted to make a play. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted my Field of Dreams web gem moment. So my dad's been throwing these, like, nice, easy balls. It's just like a simple game of catch, and I'm kind of bored with it. I'm like, this isn't challenging enough. So I say, Dad, throw it over my head so that I can run and dive and catch it and have my moment.
Yeah, so what happens next?
Well, I got my dad on the line earlier to recount some of the details because I think he recalls it better than I do.
Always a producer, Ryan. Yes, I love
it. His name is Bill Nantel, and here's his account of what happened. Let me try to pull that up for you guys.
So I remember throwing it as high and as far as I could.
I love that you did this.
And you leaped to catch the ball. You caught it in your glove, and when you came down, your glove and wrist hit the ground first, right?
So as I laid out for the ball with my glove hand outstretched, my throwing arm kind of got rolled up underneath, and it hurt pretty bad.
So you're laying on the ground. You know, you get up and you're crying, and it's like, you know, Ryan, what's wrong? What's wrong? Oh, my hand hurts. My hand hurts. I went out and said, looked at it and said, oh, you just got to shake it. You just got to shake it.
We make it through the souvenir stand. We finish walking the grounds. But as my dad said, after that...
So we got in the car, and we might have even gone to lunch or something, and you're kind of, it still hurts, and went back to the hotel to go swimming. And you were still, this really hurts. And that's when your mom said, I think we need to take Ryan to, you know, to an emergency room or something to take a look at that wrist. So we did. Wouldn't you know, they diagnosed you as having broken your wrist. Your father feels like, what an ass. You know, here I am telling him to shake it off. And, you know, and your mother was saying, I think he's hurt. Of course she was right.
Yeah, I got to admit, like old Bill Nantel, not looking the best right now, Ryan.
Yes, yes. But in fairness to him, my mom recounted how when she was a girl in the 1950s and she broke her arm, her parents did not take her to the ER until the next day. So a whole generation later, we have made some progress.
But hold on, because this winds up in the local newspaper. That's why we're here. That's why you were in that thing looking very 90s in the photographs. And it's a little faded, but like, are those neon colored shorts, Ryan?
They are neon colored shorts, and they're not just one shade of neon. They are three different shades of neon. I believe it's green and maybe an aqua and like a red. So
the 90s, man, what a magical time.
The reporter on the article is actually a family friend named Nancy Johnson. And her beat was like telling fun local stories. And my mom told me later that she had a conversation with Nancy sometime after the story published that like Nancy and her editor had kind of discussed how it would be really great to have something lighthearted like this, because this was like just a few weeks after Jeffrey Dahmer had been arrested in Milwaukee.
Oh, no.
And that was like covering all the pages of the paper. And it was just nice to have a change of pace for them, I believe. So,
yeah, you know, when you put it like that, Ryan, I mean, look, this is a story of triumph. I mean, you were once a boy, an unfortunately injured boy, but now 30 years exactly to the day cosmically, you're a man and you have a kid of your own. So I'm curious, like watching all of this Field of Dreams stuff now, do you feel like an itch? Do you feel an urge to make a pilgrimage back with your own family?
I do think had Major League Baseball not done this game, I might not have really revisited these memories to this extent. They're tapping into something for sure by doing this, and we have gotten a lot of mileage on this story in this family, probably more mileage than it takes to get from Waukesha to Dyersville. So I'll be telling it to my daughter for sure someday. You know, who knows? We may end up on that field ourselves together sometime in the future.
Yeah, I just hope that you and Rosie, your daughter, Ryan, are both wearing at least three shades of neon when you do that.
Neon will have to enter the picture somewhere for sure.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, the aforementioned Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Mike Philbrick, Andres Soto, Christian Gardner, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll dream with you on Monday.